Hi, my name is Chris Brennan, and you're listening to the Astrology Podcast. For more information about subscribing to the show, please visit theastrologypodcast.com/subscribe. If you're a fan of the show and you want to help support it or encourage me to record new episodes more frequently, then please consider becoming a patron of the show through our page on the website Patreon. By pledging as little as $1 an episode, you can get access to some exclusive benefits, such as a private discussion forum for the podcast, early access to new episodes, and higher quality recordings, as well as a bunch of other stuff. So today is Saturday, July 25th, 2015, and it's approximately 7:18 p.m. in Denver, Colorado, and this is the 39th episode of the show. In this episode, I'm going to be talking with astrologer Nick Dagan Best about the phenomenon known as Venus retrograde and its significance in astrology. For more information about Nick, please visit his website at nickdaganbest.com or check out his new podcast at iloveastrology.com. Nick, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
All right. Well, it's an appropriate day to be doing this because Venus has just stationed retrograde today, I think as of a few hours ago on July 25th, 2015. So I thought this would be a good opportunity to do a show just talking about Venus retrograde and what it's about and what sort of things it correlates with or how you can use it in astrology. So I thought it would be good to consult the, I think, generally well-regarded, or you're generally regarded as the Venus retrograde expert, Nick Dagan Best.
Well, I would hope that there are more experts than me, but I'm certainly one of them. I'm one of the obsessives anyway. I've been talking about Venus retrograde cycles for quite some time, and there's no time like the present. Indeed, Venus did just go retrograde, so we should talk about it.
All right. So let's talk about Venus retrograde, and let's just start. I thought maybe it would be good to start just by talking about, first as a sort of baseline, just what Venus signifies in astrology in general. What are some of the common or core significations as far as you're concerned?
I think of desire, objects of desire, love, partnership, relationships, relating, modes of relating, money and goods, things of value. And there's a principle of inclusion involved, unifying, reconciling. I think it's got to do with desire and with objects of desire, and socially it has to do with consensus. It has to do with agreement and people coming to some kind of mutual agreement.
Okay, that makes sense. And then what's happening now, of course, is that Venus, which usually moves forward in the zodiac, has now stationed, or it's slowed down and sort of stopped in the middle of its forward movement, or the forward movement that all of the planets make, and it's stationed retrograde. So we talked a little bit about the phenomenon of retrograde, I think a few months ago, or Lisa Scheim and I did on the episode where we talked about the History Channel episode on astrology. And one of the things that they sort of critiqued in that episode was the phenomenon of retrograde motion. Mm-hmm. And so perhaps it'd be good for us to touch upon that here, just in terms of describing like what a Venus retrograde phase is. So what is a retrograde exactly?
Well, the planet appears to be moving backwards from our perspective. It's an optical illusion. What's actually the case is during what we call a retrograde phase, the planet is actually closest to Earth, and it's so close to Earth that there's an optical illusion created whereby the planet appears to be moving backwards because we're so we're right next to them. It's not unlike the phenomenon of being on a train that's standing still, and if the train next to you is moving, it can make it feel like your train is moving and the other train is standing still. A similar sort of effect. Astrologically, the major implication, because this is from a geocentric perspective, a given planet in its retrograde phase is going to spend an extended period of time in a particular section of the zodiac, which will more or less light up that zone in the zodiac. So it has an impact for that reason.
That's an interesting point, actually, that I hadn't thought of, even though it's so simple and obvious that normally Venus is a planet that moves pretty quickly, but when it slows down and stations or stops in the zodiac and starts going retrograde, it essentially spends a much more extended period of time in that area of the zodiac than it otherwise should or would normally.
Yeah, I mean, just for starters, you get more of it. And then the other thing about it, and something that I think is really key to the power of the phase, is that the speed of the planet is shifting. Prior to the retrograde phase, there is what we call some astrologers call a shadow period. There's about a 30-day period even before Venus starts to appear to go backward, where it's gradually slowing down in the sky. And then eventually it stops after about 30 days of doing that, and it reverses direction and it goes retrograde for about 40 days. And then it slows down and stops again, and then begins to move forward again through zodiacal order, gradually accelerating over another 30-day period. And I think these shifts in the motion of the planet, in the apparent motion, are as much a key to their power astrologically as the fact that they're moving backwards, or indeed just simple things like the amount of time they spend in a given area.
Sure, that makes sense. Yeah, sometimes it's just really basic, simple, almost observational things that make a huge difference in astrology, even though you otherwise might not expect that. And I think that's one of the things that sometimes outsiders have a hard time coming into when they're dealing with astrology, is that, you know, something like retrograde, I think, really does point to using astrology and looking at things from a more symbolic standpoint because of that idea that it's an optical illusion. And even though retrograde motion is just something that's happening from our vantage point, almost as an illusion, you could say, that doesn't necessarily detract from the sort of symbolic significance of it, I think, from our perspective or from the perspective of an astrologer, but it does probably point to an interesting or important property of astrology that you have to take into account, that you're actually working with some weird form of sort of symbolism, I guess, for lack of a better term, rather than something else, where like the planet Venus is actually literally slowing down in the sky, and therefore as a result of that causing some event on Earth to take place.
Well, the thing about, I mean, it is an optical illusion, but at the same time, a geocentric perspective is as legitimate as any other perspective. I think there's a tendency to adhere a little tightly to the notion of the sun being a center, but the sun is a gravitational center of a solar system. So unless your argument on behalf of astrology has something to do with gravity, and it certainly doesn't on my part, and I don't believe it does on yours, but unless that is your argument, there's no reason to be hung up on the notion of the sun being a center for anything, especially since all the people are over here on Earth. So yes, it's an optical illusion, but it's also, insofar as a horoscope places a given individual at, say, the center of the universe, really, because any point in the universe can be a center, it puts that person's place and time of birth as a center around which everything revolves. And so even a planet in the sky revolving around that individual, that center, what it's doing, what it appears to doing is yeah, it's relevant on a symbolic basis. But even insofar as the way it was treated in the History Channel episode, and how that was a distortion, I think, is unnecessary.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, just because one of the common misconceptions is that once, you know, it was discovered, once Copernicus discovered that the sun was the center of the solar system, there was almost sometimes this perception from people that don't know much about astrology that somehow should have invalidated astrology, because astrologers were treating the universe, or that the universe was conceptualized as geocentric prior to that point. But in fact, it doesn't really change things, because no matter whether you were working with a sort of geocentric or a heliocentric model of the universe, your standpoint for casting charts, no matter what, would still be the perspective of the observer, the perspective of the person that was born at a specific moment in time. Anyway, so that's a pretty huge digression. But the point is that basically every 18 to 19 months, or approximately every year and a half, the planet Venus from our vantage point slows down, then stops moving forward and starts moving backwards in the order of the zodiac, in the order of the degrees, for about what is it, 40 days?
It's about 40 days, more or less, yeah. It can be as many as 43, but it's never less than 40.
Okay. And in terms of Venus's orbit around the sun, one of the things that's kind of interesting and perhaps important as a sort of interpretive principle, perhaps, and I heard one person mention this on your recent show. I've also heard Michael Luton mention this actually recently when I visited him in New York, that Venus, when it goes retrograde, it's always at the point in its cycle around the sun when it's closest to the Earth, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, that in and of itself is kind of striking, that when Venus is retrograde, Venus will always be between the sun and the Earth, whereas when Venus is direct and it conjoins the sun, it will always end up being on the other side of the sun.
Exactly.
Rather than closer to the Earth.
Right, exactly. There's a tendency to think of that RX can have a funny impact on astrologers, the RX symbol that stands for retrograde. It looks like the planet is being sort of, that there's a tendency to think it's being sort of weakened or something of that nature, whereas really the planet is being sort of, it's emphasized, it's really close by, you know, like a flame. You tend to feel it, you tend to feel the heat of a flame when it's closer to you and not further away. So I think that's a key, certainly in terms of wrapping your head around why this period should be so distinct in an overall 19-month period, why this little 40-day window should be so intense. It is the period when that planet is, in this case Venus, when it's really, really close.
Okay. Well, I think that's important as sort of an astronomical basis, because that gives you almost like an immediate astronomical rationale for the importance of the period, as you just said, or why, you know, this might be unique, or the symbolism pertaining to Venus might become more prominent for some reason in either individual lives or in terms of mundane events because of Venus suddenly being in that phase of her cycle when she's the closest to the Earth. And sort of in connection with that, I guess we have to mention the three primary, at least, parts of the retrograde cycle, which the first one of which is the retrograde station, which is essentially, other things aside, the beginning of the actual retrograde period. So when Venus slows down and then stations retrograde, which is what it's doing today on July 25th, then about halfway through the cycle, we have the conjunction with the sun, or the exact conjunction with the sun, and that's when it's halfway through the retrograde cycle, and also that's the point at which it will be closest to the Earth. And then finally, we have the direct station, when Venus slows down and then stations direct and then starts moving forward again shortly after that. So you have these three sort of specific events within the context, or sort of peaks within the context of the retrograde cycle. I guess that's our sort of basic astronomical starting point, right?
Right, exactly.
All right. But beyond that, I think a lot of astrologers, this isn't something that was used a lot traditionally, or at least I've not found any traditional references to it, but it seems to be something that was developed more in, I want to say, the past few decades. And some people have attributed it to the astrologer Roxana Muse, the idea of shadow periods, and the idea that the retrograde periods themselves don't just start and end at the stations, but that there's a buildup phase that builds up towards or before the first station, the retrograde station, and then there's kind of like a post-retrograde period after the direct station.
Yes.
And these are referred to as the shadow periods. And this is something that you use a lot as well, right?
I do. To say that I use them, I don't feel I had any choice in the matter. In particular, the pre-retrograde shadow period is a very loud phase in the Venus period, in that it makes itself known. It's got a very distinct quality relative to any sort of other period in the Venus phase. This is prior to Venus going retrograde. We haven't gone into the sort of the two phases of Venus and what they mean, but it is sort of, there is a notion of a rebirth when Venus is going retrograde and crosses over the sun and then comes out on the other side. So this period just prior to all that happening Well, what happens just before rebirth? Well, kind of a death, isn't it? And so there is this sort of desperate nature that you see in the world at times like this, whenever Venus is slowing down and approaching its retrograde station. And I think you'd have to be pretty shut off from current events to not witness that happening yet again. I mean, I've been following Venus for quite some time, and it's always the case the heat and the sort of the pace of current events in terms of the speed of the dialogue, the intensity of the things going on, and the emotions and the seriousness of everything. Scandals are exposed during Venus retrogrades, and news is very sensational.
Sure.
You know, there's a whole shift in the public mood. So if you're attuned to media, if you're attuned to arts, if you're attuned to politics, either, no matter what, if you're aware of the Venus retrograde cycle, you can always see, like, it's like night and day, you know. It doesn't necessarily catch you off guard, because just as you expect night to follow day, if you know the Venus cycle in that pre-retrograde shadow phase, it's such a distinctive quality that it's, to me, as recognizable as night and day.
Sure. So, and the buildup phase, this lasts for essentially about, what did you say, about 30 days as the shadow period before the retrograde station?
Give or take, yeah. You know, sometimes you can stretch that goalpost a bit more if you like, but I use 30 days arbitrarily because that's more or less when Venus begins to transit through the degrees that prior to the retrograde it will eventually cross back through, and then following the retrograde that it'll transit through for a third time. It's like a path. It marks a path, if you will, that the planet's going to be crisscrossing back and forth. And so that's what that 30-day window indicates, if nothing else. It's also, in my view, when the planet really starts to be moving at a pace that's slow enough that you recognize it, and really decelerating prior to the retrograde at a really recognizable speed.
Sure. And so specifically, to sort of narrow it down, or for exactness, the shadow period begins as soon as Venus passes the exact degree that it will later retrograde back to and station direct at. And that's the beginning of the sort of pre-retrograde shadow period. And then eventually, after the retrograde, it doesn't complete the post-retrograde shadow period until it passes the degree that it originally retrograded at. So right now, for example, today, it's going retrograde at 0 degrees Virgo. So even though in a few weeks from now, it's going to station direct in mid-Leo, the full post-retrograde shadow period is not going to be over until Venus passes and goes direct over, 0 degrees of Virgo again to complete the shadow period?
Exactly. Exactly, yeah.
Okay, so ultimately then, if each shadow period is approximately 30 days, and if the retrograde itself is about 40 days, then that gives us basically about the full retrograde cycle being about a 100-day period in the year.
Correct, which accounts for about 1/6 of total time. If you can wrap your head around that idea, if all time, for as long as we've had planets orbiting the sun and Earth, and yeah, I mean, it wouldn't have mattered if life were on Earth or not, the planets were still doing what they do now. So in all that time, regardless of how you slice it and dice it, the Venus retrograde phase, the pre-retrograde shadow, the retrograde period, and the post-retrograde shadow, that 100-day period accounts for about 1/6 of total time, which relative to the retrograde phases of the other planets aside from Mars is a pretty small window of time, you know. Jupiter and Saturn are retrograde for a third of the time, you know.
When you include the shadow periods or when you without?
Well, shadow periods get a bit tricky when you're thinking about Jupiter and Saturn.
Sure, with the outer planets, because it just covers so much time.
Yeah, you're looking, when it comes to using those planets and studying their phases, I find you're better off just looking at a chronological time shadow as opposed to a zodiacal degree shadow like we're doing here. Although here we're really doing both at once. But that's one of the tricky things about the shadow. I mean, it has an impact with Venus because of the particular speed of Venus, and Venus is really special in that way. And the only other planet that I would describe having a retrograde phase that has this event feel to it, you know, I mean, it doesn't happen very often, is Mars. And I'm particularly fascinated with their cycles very much because they are rare. They don't occur all the time. And therefore, when they do surface, they're that much more noticeable.
Sure. And since they're inner planets, they're, I almost want to say, almost more personal in a sense, or in the things that they typically pertain to can be a little bit more immediate in some sense and sort of obvious or blatant. I almost want to say, maybe I'm going too far in saying that, but that might be the reason why, you know, like Venus and Mars might stand out more, especially, you know, in addition to the frequency of their retrograde periods.
They're planets of relating. So, you know, they affect the lives of everybody, and even the hermit who doesn't, you know, spend any time with other people is still having Venus and Mars transits, probably with regard to the animals around her or what have you. So they're planets of relating. They're the planets that have to do with an individual and everything else around them. And they have to do with the very sort of the high, the most elevated and the most debased forms of relating between individuals. So the fact that number one, that they're so to, in answer to what you're saying, I would say that they're very personal, but they're also very, very social. I mean, they make up, they're the planets that sort of make up our social fabric. Mm-hmm. If you get on the bus in the morning to go to the office, everyone on the bus, you know, that you're not having, you know, Saturn transit necessarily with everyone on that bus. It's more sort of Venus and Mars, and who's going to give up their seat for who, and who didn't put on their deodorant, and you know, those sort of things.
Sure. And just basic sort of core desires that are sort of inherent in every individual in some sense.
Exactly. Who do you have a crush on while sitting on the bus? You know, that's another one that happens there. It's all Venus and Mars. It has to do with how we're sharing space and interacting or not interacting. I mean, people don't really interact on a bus, but they're still there. That's my point.
Right. Sort of ideas or themes of sort of like attraction and repulsion in some sense.
Yeah. All of that, the gamut, the whole gamut. And and they both have to do with that. It's not, there's, I think, a simplistic way sometimes of just thinking, well, Venus is the love and beauty one and Mars is the violence and ugly sex one. But no, they both have their honorable and dishonorable sides, I'd say.
Sure.
They both represent principles that can be honorable and dishonorable. Let's say that.
Yeah. In my last episode, I was talking to Rob Hand about sect, and he was specifically going into the more honorable sides of Mars in terms of ideas of like courage or, you know, putting oneself before others in order to protect other people or things like that.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, so we've talked a little bit about just Venus retrograde as a phase in and of itself, sort of in terms of its own cycle and in terms of its cycle around the sun. But there's sort of a separate cycle that's also relevant when we start talking about Venus retrograde, which is its position in the zodiac, and that it also has a sort of cycle in terms of the retrograde phases within that. Mm-hmm. So Venus is stationing retrograde today at 0 degrees of Virgo. But one of the things that people sometimes don't know or sometimes have to learn is that Venus stations retrograde in approximately the same spot in the zodiac every 8 years. Is that correct?
Yes. Venus stations retrograde pretty much in the same spot in the zodiac every 8 years. There's about a 2 to 3 day and a 2 to 3 zodiacal degree difference from 1 8-year period to the other. It gradually recedes. For instance, today's July 25th, and Venus went retrograde at 0 Virgo, which means one knows offhand that back in 2007, 8 years ago, Venus went retrograde on July 27th at 2 degrees of Virgo. You see, it was two calendar days later, 8 years ago, and it was two zodiacal degrees later, 8 years ago. So it always gradually recedes. And what this actually means, since Venus is going retrograde at 0 degrees Virgo today, this is the last Venus retrograde station in Virgo that we're going to have for a very long time, for well over 100 years. I could do the math, but I think we're even running into over 200 years. So it is rather an occasion. This gradual recession into Leo began in 1959. 1959 was the first time. Before 1959, this Venus retrograde occurred only in Virgo. But as of 29, the direct stations began to happen in Leo. And then I think it was back in, if I'm not mistaken, 1983, or I got the information right here. I'm sorry. In 1987 was the first time that we had the conjunction, what we call the superior or the exterior conjunction during the retrograde at in Leo instead of Virgo. And that was followed in the retrograde of 1991 with the first interior or inferior conjunction, which is when Venus makes a conjunction to the Sun during its retrograde. And in 1991 was the first time it happened in Leo instead of Virgo. So in many ways, today's station at zero Virgo refers back to the years 1983 and 1979, which were the last time we had Venus conjunctions to the Sun in Virgo. It's this gradual recession through the zodiac that's in operation.
Sure, just because it just moves backwards basically 2 degrees every 8 years, and then you can sort of add that up with 30 degrees each sign.
Exactly, exactly. And then after about 120 years, you know, it moves from one sign to the other. So this retrograde that's now happening, going from Virgo to Leo, if you go back to the 19th century, it used to be a Venus retrograde that went through Libra and then from Libra to Virgo. So it always gradually moves like that.
It's interesting how when you're looking at it from the broad perspective of history, from the larger historical perspective, that you can really take into account and notice major differences like that Venus retrograde, where you have the retrograde stationing direct or retrograde in Virgo, is much different than a retrograde or station direct in Leo, and that the conjunction with the Sun that occurs in Virgo is much different than a conjunction that occurs in Leo, and so on and so forth.
It absolutely, once you get to know the cycle, and especially the operation of the cycle through history, an astrologer can start to think of the cycle of Venus in much the same way that some mundane astrologers think of the cycles of the outer planets, in that they can demarcate these broader eras in life. Now, in the life of one individual human, 80 to 100 years, let's say, that recession through the zodiac is not going to be that severe. It'll go through about half the sign over the course of a person's lifetime. But indeed, when you're looking at broader historical passages, you can really start to identify different Venus retrogrades through different signs. I'll give you another example relative to the 19th century. To my mind, one of the big differences between the 19th century and the 20th century vis-a-vis Venus is that in the 19th century, we had Venus retrogrades that went through Libra and Taurus, whereas in the 20th century, we've had the retrogrades going through Scorpio and Aries. Mm. And I identify so much about human history and civilization and the way it changed, especially the way it changed, but also just as it existed in those two very distinct eras in history. I identify as an astrologer those changes in sign very much with those eras.
Sure. That's a really interesting and different approach to just mundane astrology, which, like you said, is very much more wrapped up in just outer planet cycles. But it turns out, I mean, this is this Venus retrograde period, this is something that's very old and that's been used for a very long time, because they had, for example, the planetary periods in early Hellenistic astrology, where they recognized the 8-year period of Venus as being a crucially important sort of timing factor or timing technique that you could use to study increments of time in a person's life. So it's interesting seeing what we normally think of as a quick inner planet being used for much broader sort of outer planet-like sort of studies in that way.
In my experience, Venus is the cornerstone planet to use in mundane astrology, which I realize is very controversial in the age of a Jupiter-Saturn square.
Or Uranus-Pluto square,
or a Uranus-Pluto square. And, you know, don't get me wrong, folks, I absolutely follow those planets as well very closely. But the cycle of Venus, again, is about relating. So whether you're studying politics or you're studying the arts, you really see it surface just everywhere. Jupiter and Saturn comes down to sort of the success and failure of things, and they really can be very sort of independent personal planets in many ways. But Venus is about shifting tastes and shifting allegiances and shifting cultures. And every radical change that befalls a society, be it positive or negative, and the way those changes impact individual people, these are all Venusian matters. So it's really like the sort of core fabric of everything.
And it doesn't even necessarily have to be used in isolation. I mean, when you're looking at some of these broader long range cycles, you're taking into account like a Venus retrograde period that occurs, you know, next to a Jupiter-Saturn conjunction or something like that, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. For instance, this summer's Venus retrograde is very distinct. It's going through Leo just like it did 8 years ago. But 8 years ago in 2007, Saturn was in Leo going into Virgo.
Right. I remember that one, yeah.
Yeah, sure. You and I knew each other then.
Yeah.
And so that was Venus retrograde having to interact with Saturn. This time we have Jupiter going through Leo, squaring Saturn in Scorpio, as it turns out. That's how things start out. That'll be in the coming week or two that we'll be dealing with that sort of scenario. And then later in the retrograde, towards the end of August, Venus will actually be making a conjunction to Mars. Now, Venus being coincidental or co-present, we say, with Jupiter during its retrograde phase. That occurs every 24 years, and it's an interesting thing to follow, and I've got things to say about that later. A Venus conjunction to Mars while Venus is retrograde is quite rare. They don't pop up everywhere. We had one in 1972 in Cancer during the time of the Watergate break-in. They happen once in a while, but my point being to have both of them occurring in the same single Venus retrograde transit in one summer is extremely rare. I don't know of another example of all that happening all at once.
Sure.
So there really is something quite unique about this summer's Venus retrograde cycle relative to any other, certainly that I've studied.
And it's also odd because we start off with the first half of it with Venus in the pre-retrograde shadow period conjoining Jupiter as it did, I think, about a month ago. Mm. And, being in the same sign, and then it stations retrograde today in Virgo, and then it comes back into Leo and conjoins Jupiter again in late Leo. But then by, I think, mid-August, Jupiter leaves Leo and moves into Virgo. And not too long after that, around that time, Mars then ingresses into Leo, and Venus eventually stations direct pretty close to when Mars will eventually conjoin it. So there's almost also, if you wanted to narrow it down and look at it more specifically, just in terms of this retrograde and what makes it unique or what sort of qualities it might have, is weirdly sort of characterized by that Jupiter conjunction in the first half with Venus versus the Mars conjunction in the second half with Venus and Mars.
Completely, completely. I think looking back, it's going to be very starkly obvious that the transit of one conjunction at the beginning of a month and then the next conjunction at the end of the month with these two very different planets, and how that's going to be reflected in day-to-day life, in the life of day-to-day individuals, and certainly whatever is printed on the newspaper or on the iPad screen.
Sure. So maybe let's start getting into that then, in terms of what Venus retrograde actually means astrologically, and how this might be relevant in individual lives and sort of interpreted. So one of the things that I often come back to is just this idea that retrograde motion is a kind of anomaly, or the planet is moving forward, and that's its typical movement through the zodiac or along the ecliptic. But then every once in a while, for Venus at least, every year and a half, it has this sort of anomalous motion that begins for that period of time of 40 days or 100 days or however you want to define it, and that there's something unique or out of the ordinary or, as I said, anomalous about that with respect to what the planet signifies or what the planet means. So one of the themes that comes up in the astrological community that almost seems to be a debate, but it probably doesn't necessarily need to be one, is whether a retrograde period, and specifically something like a Venus retrograde, is more of an intensification of that planet, or if it represents a sort of reversal of it, since it's literally walking backwards or moving backwards through the zodiac at that point. How do you feel about it, or where do you think that lies?
I think it's an intensification. I think the planet becomes kind of an extreme version of itself. Mm. Certainly in the first part of the phase. I mean, this is the thing, is there's a transformation involved. So to even be describing the retrograde is to be describing a transformation and not one character to the other. It would not be enough to say, well, Venus retrograde is Dr. Jekyll, or Venus retrograde is Mr. Hyde. The whole point is it's that shift over. That's the most discernible thing that's going on. In terms of what it means, well, like I said earlier, I think of Venus as representing consensus. It's the world as we understand it and the rules as we know them up until now. And then the retrograde comes along, and it puts consensus up for review. And let me give you some idea of how it does things. If the consensus is that women should only have children in wedlock, or that people should only have sex with their marital partners, it's very often during Venus retrograde phase when these particular rules come under review. That is to say, when it comes to people who are having extramarital affairs, who are having children as single parents, who are doing anything that is against the sort of the that is contrary to the sort of social consensus as to how these things are supposed to these matters of life are supposed to be handled. It's not a moral judgment coming from me or in describing the transit, but in terms of how society is going to respond, anything that is contrary to that sort of. So it can have to do with the law, but not necessarily. It can also just have to do with social mores, social standards. Again, it has to do with relating. So somebody during the retrograde phase, somebody somewhere is doing something that challenges the rules of relating.
I mean, one of the obvious examples recently was the Supreme Court ruling that took place pretty close to like the beginning of the Venus retrograde shadow period, beginning about a month ago, right?
Yeah, it was a little outside the shadow period. It was closer to what we would sometimes call the greatest elongation, which is another way I look at the Venus retrograde phase. What is very interesting about that, nobody's talked about this yet. It's included in a video that I'm putting together. But if you go back to 1967, in June of 1967, and very much in a parallel to the gay marriage ruling, it was in June of 1967 that the U.S. Supreme Court decriminalized interracial marriage. Mm. In much the same part of the Venus phase, Jupiter was also in Leo, just like it is now.
Venus was getting ready to go retrograde.
Exactly. Venus was getting ready to go retrograde. It was the same distance from its retrograde station as it was this time with the gay marriage ruling. You know, more or less, give or take a few days. So That's the thing is there is this, this is a cycle. There is something being repeated, even though every Venus retrograde from 8-year period to 8-year period has its own distinct quality. Like we were saying with regard to 2007 when Saturn was in Leo and this year when Jupiter's in Leo. At the same time, this is a cycle. At the same time, something is coming up again over and over. Coming up for review is very much a way to put it. Very much when it comes to scandals, this is the thing, is this is the way that these bubbles, these social bubbles are often popped, is through scandal. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the history of scandal, they almost always come up, the big ones, especially in American politics, during Venus retrograde. The first time we ever heard the name Monica Lewinsky, Venus was retrograde. The Watergate break-in was Venus retrograde. The Bay of Pigs invasion was Venus retrograde. The Cuban Missile Crisis. I mean, I could go on and on and on and on. it's really fun after a while. You can tell long historical stories just talking about events that happened in Venus retrograde, and you can wind up telling very, very complete stories.
Right, and you can sometimes, and you link them together oftentimes through those 8-year periods and seeing repetitions of or connections between events that otherwise you wouldn't think were connected but are showing similar themes because they're being connected in these 8-year Venus cycles.
Exactly. So there's we get those Venus retrogrades every 8 years, and there are a total of 5 of them, you see. So there are 5 Venus retrogrades that are repeated over and over in this 8-year cycle. And what you wind up getting is these 5 points that are equidistant from each other wind up forming what looks like a pentagram or a 5-sided star. And so far as I know, I guess there's no conclusive proof on this, but it seems to me that the image of the 5-pointed star, which is depicted on most flags, not most flags, but many flags, many national flags across the world, mm-hmm. it's one of the most internationally recognized symbols, I think, the 5-pointed star. And so far as I know, it depicts Venus, or it certainly appears to. Like I said, I guess that's never been proven conclusively, but it's just the kind of thing that I'm tempted to presume.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was like a plot point in like the Da Vinci Code or something.
If Dan Brown says it, then, you know, yeah, what do I know? It must be true. Okay.
That's all the authority I need personally.
Okay. Well, so, I didn't realize it. I never read it, but I mean, it stands to reason. It stands to
reason. Yeah. Well, yeah, and I mean, that was based on Holy Blood, Holy Grail, which was slightly more actually historically researched by, you know,
yes,
relatively well-respected historians. So, all right, so we talked a little bit about, you talked a little bit about different sort of mundane instances of Venus retrograde coming up in the world at large and it affecting different things, like, let's say, American politics or American society. But in addition to that, you can also apply it to birth charts. And I wanted to talk a little bit about how this is applied in practice when it comes to natal astrology. Mm. And one of the maybe distinctions might be from the start is, you know, how one could use the Venus retrograde cycle, or let's say the fact that Venus goes retrograde every 8 years in the same spot in the zodiac and sometimes connects together similar events or similar themes, and use that to make a prediction either, you know, in a person's life or a prediction about a mundane event versus how you would work with it in a client's chart and what you would say to a client that was having Venus go retrograde and how you would actually relate that to their life. Is there a distinction between those two, or are they still sort of intertwined in some way?
Oh, I would say they're intertwined. The main way an astrologer can use these cycles, I'd say the first thing to do is to memorize them. And it's not hard because there are 5 of them every 8 years.
So what do you mean by that, or explain like how would a person go about doing that?
Well, to look up your ephemeris or using software to make a note of when Venus retrogrades occur and where they occur. If you know the 5 spots, currently the 5 spots are early Virgo to Leo, like it's happening now, and then
let's start with that one actually, because I don't think we did that earlier. Just
yeah.
So Venus is going retrograde in Virgo and Leo now, so we know that 8 years ago in the summer in July of 2007 it went retrograde in the same spot, and then it 8 years prior to that, in the summer of 1999, it went retrograde in the same spot, and just keep counting backwards in 8 year intervals, and you'll be in the same retrograde cycle in approximately the same spot of the zodiac each 8 years.
Exactly. And so
that's the sort of the first thing that you have to memorize, is just pick a specific retrograde and then memorize what years it went retrograde in those signs, just counting backwards in 8 year intervals.
Exactly. It's a matter of knowing how to subtract or add eight and or multiply eight. So
really quickly, just for the sake of people that have addition or subtraction issues, let's just count back quickly. And what are the other Venus retrogrades in this cycle that we're in right now, sort of going back from, so we said 2007,
1999, 1991, 1983, 1975, 1967, 1959, 1951, 1943, 1935, 1927, 1919, 1911, 1903, 1895, 1887.
Okay.
1879.
You'll go on for like an hour if I let you.
No, I do know them by heart.
Okay.
So
and that's why they call you the human ephemeris.
That's why they call me the human ephemeris. They also call me that because I told people to call me that. But
right. we don't say that part. and that's still roughly in the same spot of the year. I mean, it is moving back
gradually,
2 days and 2 degrees, but we're still very roughly, at least for any time within a person's like lifetime, or let's say the past few decades, roughly in the same part of the year, in like the summer, or maybe moving into the early fall.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was born in 1968. I'm going to be 50 years old in a few years, but when I was born, Venus was going retrograde at about the year before I was born. Venus went retrograde at 13 Virgo and went direct at 27 Leo. And now it's going retrograde at 0 Virgo and direct at about 14 Leo, I guess. Meaning that, I'm more or less halfway through my life, hopefully anyway. And the shift, that gradual shift through the signs has not gone all that. It hasn't been all that extreme. In one person's lifetime, it'll move through about half a sign, about 15 degrees of a sign.
Yeah, that's only about 13 degrees in yours.
Exactly. So that's not all that much. Where it really starts to make a difference is if you're studying multiple generations or longer stretches of history.
Sure.
With that being said, looking at a given individual, let's stick with the Virgo one. I could describe the other four retrogrades as well. Maybe we'll do that in a bit. But with this one, let's just say anytime, not necessarily right now, but let's say 3 months ago, someone came to you and showed you their chart and they have a 28 degree Leo ascendant. And if you knew your Venus cycles, you would say to yourself, oh, yes, this summer Venus is going to go retrograde at 0 Virgo and it's going to cross over this person's ascendant back and forth. And you would know, and then the next question to contemplate would be, well, I wonder what the transit of 2007 was like for this person.
Sure. So you can figure out what the current retrograde will be like, or what retrogrades in the future will be like, by asking them and finding out what retrogrades in the same spot of essentially their chart were in the past.
Exactly. What you tend to find is there are themes. It doesn't automatically, we're not talking about something that's automatically favorable or unfavorable. So they can easily run the gamut in terms of, 2007 was horrible, but 2015 was terrific, or vice versa. But one does tend to see the same theme coming up. It's almost like a reset button. And when it's really prominent, when it's, like I said, if it's crossing someone's ascendant like that, or interacting with another really key point in a person's chart, these 8 year intervals can almost seem like new chapters. Like if you were the person's biographer, these periods would be where you would be inclined to start, that new chapter in the book you're writing about the person, to tell the person's story in sort of invisible, demarcated mini eras, if you will.
Sure. And I mean, you've read enough biographies that sometimes biographers actually literally do start chapters like that in sort of humorously in tandem with the Venus retrograde periods, even though they don't realize it.
Oh, yeah. No, biographers can be astounding astrologers and they don't even know it. It's pretty fun. Yeah.
So that sort of sets up a thing where you can sort of get in the mindset of being able to spot certain activities that would respond to certain Venus retrogrades versus others that might not be as, what would you say, responsive to them?
Yeah, responsive is a word. I mean, sometimes I've slipped and used a word like vulnerable, which can be accurate sometimes, but it isn't. It doesn't really convey the word I want. I like responsive because that's loose enough.
more neutral, I guess.
More neutral, and it describes what I'm trying to describe without trying to sort of over define the idea.
Or sort of, I don't want to say value judgment. I mean, but certainly, vulnerable, I'm sure, would be applicable for some examples or some nativities. I mean, you mentioned like the Monica Lewinsky scandal happening under a Venus retrograde in the past. And so that sort of maybe in some instances, maybe that is more appropriate for certain charts if that retrograde opens the door to problems coming up or something for whatever reason the chart is set up that way.
If the outcome happens to be unpleasant or the person experiencing the transit has an experience that is that conveys a sort of victim experience. But that's not always the case. It's easy to obviously look at the Lewinsky story and put that out there. Again, it's about consensus. I mean, the Lewinsky story was about an extramarital affair and abuse of power. And obviously it was at the whole core of political office. So it was a scandal for many, many reasons. And for that reason, it was just classic Venus retrograde.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even just in terms of like the basic meanings and sort of nature of Venus and your earlier comment of that in terms of challenging the consensus.
Exactly. Yeah. So in terms of being able to spot people's nativities who are vulnerable, number one is if you have the cycles memorized and you're looking at charts, then you start to see things. If you know they have a Leo or an Aries or a Scorpio or a Capricorn or a Gemini ascendant, if they happen to fall within the correct degrees, the appropriate degrees, then you know right off the hat, well, this is someone who gets a Venus retrograde transit across that point every 8 years. And the question begs, well, what is that experience like? And there will be a story there. There is always a story there.
Sure, if Venus retrograde goes across one of their four angles, that tends to be a great indication for somebody that's sensitive to that specific retrograde.
Exactly. Across certain angles, across the angles, crossing the lights, or other key planets that, have a lot of weight in the chart. And any of those points, because they'll be getting this sustained, extra Venus transit over a long period of time. And because it's a repetition, it tends to evoke this cyclical feeling in a person's life.
Sure. Yeah. And that makes sense. And that would sort of tie them in almost permanently to that cycle, since that's going to be happening every 8 years, roughly around the same spot in the zodiac for the greater part of their life. So there would be certain people that would just be very keyed into that specific retrograde cycle.
That's just it. That's why I really recommend astrologers memorize this. And that's why I like to, in consultations, I will often show people how their cycles are really emphasized and the Venus cycle is really emphasized in their lives. Because once a person understands where their chart is hit by a Venus retrograde cycle, then you're set for life in a way. because if you get it, if you know, oh, okay, when I was 7 years old, one thing happened, and then I was 15, 8 years old, and this other event that's kind of related happened, and then when I was 23, 8 years old, oh, yes, I can see how that was cumulative of the other experiences, and so on and so forth. The analogy I use is thinking about sort of prehistoric people who might not have understood that when the sun went under the horizon and everything got dark, they might not have understood or were reassured that the sun would come up again and everything would be okay and there would be light again. Mm-hmm. And if you know your Venus cycle, it can be a bit like that. Nighttime doesn't have to be a scary thing. Many of us are perfectly comfortable at night and find it relaxing because we know it will be day again. It's not sort of darkness forever. And there can even be comfort in the whole process of the darkness and the night. It's not necessarily the time we resist at all. And I think the same is very true of a Venus retrograde. Is as long as you're not afraid of the dark, it can be just fine. And if anything, it can be quite glorious.
Sure. So what are some examples? Let's go through some examples of just like famous, maybe celebrity charts where somebody had a Venus retrograde that went over a certain angle in their chart and repeatedly went over that angle in 8-year increments, and just like what sort of events tied that together for them.
Okay, well, I've got a bunch of those. One of my favorites, maybe to start with, is good old Franklin Roosevelt. Franklin Roosevelt, who was born the 30th of January, 1882, 8:45 p.m. in Hyde Park, New York. Franklin Roosevelt had four planets in Taurus: Saturn at 6 degrees Taurus, Neptune at 13 degrees Taurus, Jupiter at 16, and Pluto retrograde at 27. The main planets I'm going to be looking here are the first three: the Saturn, the Neptune, and the Jupiter. So he's got those three planets in Taurus that we're looking at. And like I said, back in the 19th century when he was born, there used to be a Venus retrograde in Taurus. In fact, there had been one the year prior to his birth. So he didn't experience his first one until 1889. And I don't know much about that. I don't know yet about what happened in his childhood, but let's jump ahead to his adulthood. March 17th, 1905, just as when Venus was at just about to go retrograde, it was at 8 degrees Taurus. And because he was Jupiter was also in Taurus at that time.
Okay.
In March of 1905. This is when he married Eleanor Roosevelt, his cousin, whose name was already... Does anybody know Eleanor Roosevelt's maiden name? It's Roosevelt. Anyway.
Right. That is convenient.
It is convenient. So there we go. So Venus is about to go retrograde, and he's marrying his wife. And if we need to explain why the marriage of Franklin Roosevelt to Eleanor Roosevelt is in any way important, then you probably have more important learning to do than what we're discussing on the podcast. So, okay, we jump ahead 8 years and we go to March 1913. Venus is again in Taurus, about to go retrograde, very close to Franklin's Saturn. And this is when he's named the Assistant Secretary to the U.S. Navy by President Woodrow Wilson, which incidentally is a job that Teddy Roosevelt had before, his cousin who's been president before. And this is when Franklin Roosevelt first goes to Washington. This is his first government job. This is him moving to Washington.
His first big political appointment?
Exactly. This is a future U.S. president moving to Washington, D.C. So clearly it's important, just like the wedding. These are not arbitrary events. No matter what one person thinks of Franklin Roosevelt, one would agree, yes, these are obviously pivotal events for him. Now, I could go through his biography. There are things about 1937 in his presidency during the Venus retrograde in Taurus. This is when he was doing his famous court packing thing in his fireside chat. Basically, there was a big sort of power struggle in his presidency, and it's one of the weaker points in his presidency. I don't want to get into the fine points of his political career in order to convey this point, and I don't really have to, because if we jump ahead another 8 years after 1937, April 12th, 1945, when Venus is retrograde now in Aries, but it was a Venus retrograde that went from Taurus to Aries, this is when Franklin Roosevelt died.
Wow.
And in fact, that Venus retrograde that goes from Taurus to Aries, there have been many, quite a few U.S. presidents who've died during that Venus retrograde phase. Dwight Eisenhower would die during the Venus retrograde in Aries. And then in office, Abraham Lincoln was shot during the Venus retrograde in Taurus. James Garfield was shot during a Venus retrograde in Taurus. William Henry Harrison died, the first U.S. president to ever die, died when Venus was going retrograde in Taurus. So that particular retrograde has this profound resonance. I mean, I don't see how you could argue with me. I just told you about Franklin Roosevelt's marriage, career, and death, the three central points of life, and they all occurred in the small window of time in the same Venus retrograde, Chris. This isn't just about it being 1/6 of total time.
Right.
We're talking about a 100-day window of time that occurs once every 8 years. So we're talking about a fraction that's more like 1/29th of total time.
And it wasn't just that he died. I mean, that was like the culmination of World War II.
Yes. Who else died in April of 1945? Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler was born with Venus retrograde in Taurus, and he died during Venus retrograde in Taurus. And I can tell you Hitler's life story in much the same way that I just told Roosevelt's, in a similar fashion. I mean, he didn't get married to his sweetheart or anything like that. But I can lay out Hitler's life in much the same way using those Venus retrograde transits. I can do it with Churchill, J. Edgar Hoover, all the World War II guys, De Gaulle. Churchill. These are all real Venus retrograde people. And you can even, to some degree, talking about the Second World War relating to Venus retrograde and superior conjunction cycles.
Okay. Well, I think that was actually a great historical example. I mean, unless you had another one that we could go through quickly, maybe we should talk or transition to like a client example or how you would use this with a client, or if you've had any anecdotes about like personal experiences with this.
Yeah, I could talk about some client anecdotes because obviously I could go on and on about history.
And you actually have some videos and workshops where you do exactly that, right?
Exactly. I haven't done the World War II one, but that definitely will be done someday. So if anyone wanted me to talk about Churchill and De Gaulle, I'll certainly do it at some point. So stay tuned. But yes, this happens in everyday life. Even just in sort of general social interaction, I met a woman a few months ago. She found out I was an astrologer, and she told me her date of birth, that she was – I don't need to go into her chart. She was a 1987 Aquarius with a Scorpio rising. Now, because I know that in the fall of 1986, Venus goes retrograde in Scorpio, I was intrigued. I thought, this is a woman, since she's got Scorpio rising – this is a woman who, when she was in her baby's womb, would have had Venus go retrograde over what would eventually be her ascendant.
When she was in her mother's womb?
Exactly. So I was curious. It was just sort of a hunch I had. And I asked her, I said, well, given I imagine that when your mother was about 6-7 months pregnant with you, that she went through some kind of trauma. She went through some kind of schism with a woman or some other sort of really difficult experience involving that. And this woman said, well, yes, when my mother was about 6-7 months pregnant with me, she found out that her mother had just been diagnosed with cancer. And this woman died not too long after the baby, this woman I'm talking about, the child was born.
Jeez.
So
that is an underdeveloped field of a branch of astrology. Like, that's prenatal astrology, essentially, is what you're doing.
Exactly. But I did it on a hunch. I mean, it's one little anecdote, but I did it all based knowing that she was born in February of 1987 with a Scorpio ascendant. And of course, born in the 80s, so she had Pluto in Scorpio. I suggested this on a hunch. I wasn't looking at the chart or anything, but just knowing, having memorized the Venus cycle, knowing that Venus retrograde in Scorpio would have crossed over what would have been the ascendant, I had hunched that, you know, I bet that transit was still in effect even though the baby wasn't born yet.
Sure, and just demonstrating that principle of retrogrades over the angles are super important.
Exactly. It could be something that early and that crucial.
Okay. Well, when you're actually doing a consultation, how do you apply that, or how would you apply that if somebody like sat down for a consultation with you?
Sometimes in consultations, when relevant, I'll take a client through their Venus retrograde phases. I'll certainly do this when I'm confronted with a chart that suggests to me that this should be the course of action. So like everything else in astrology, you spend a long time preparing for the moments when you're going to have hunches. That to me is the whole key to the process. So in those situations, I'll take a client through, if their memories for their lives have to be good. So if we were talking about this summer, I would ask them, well, what did the summer of 2007 mean to you? I can give you an anecdote from my podcast. At the end of my podcast, I Love Astrology, the last 20 minutes, I do a consultation with someone. I actually call it Synodic Stories. So in the first episode of my podcast, I had a woman who was born with Venus retrograde in Aries. And she had planets, she had the moon in Aquarius and Mars in Aquarius. And so I knew looking at her chart that the Venus retrograde in Leo, which is opposite Aquarius, would be very powerful for her because she had both the moon and Mars in Aquarius, which is opposite Leo. So seeing her chart, it was actually knowing that she was born with Venus retrograde. I had about 10, 12 applicants for people who wanted their chart read, and I picked her specifically because she had Venus retrograde. And I asked her about 2007, the last time Venus had been retrograde opposite her moon and Mars. And she said, oh, well, that's when I moved out of my mother's house with my children, moved out of my hometown, got a new, great new paying job in a new city, and sort of started my life. And it was the first time I was really on my feet as a single mother. And I said, oh, okay, well, let's go back another 8 years, 1999. And she said, that's right when I broke up with my children's father and I had to dance as an exotic dancer in order to pay the bills.
Mm.
So
that's a great example of themes being sort of tied together.
Exactly, exactly. She had this innate sense. She knew some astrology herself, and having been born with Venus retrograde, she knew her life's chronology very well, and she already had some understanding of how Venus retrograde operated in her life. But she had never sort of, I guess what I was able to help her do in the episode was show her how it all sort of fits together, have her face the sort of the whole fabric of her life, this cloth that weaves in year after year and revisits her every 8 years, how that operates. So that's...
Yeah, there's something a little startling, or almost, I would think, if you're coming from outside of the astrological community and you presented someone with this and sort of just showed it in all these charts, there would almost be something like unsettling about it from a philosophical standpoint, I would think.
Well, no one's expecting us to demonstrate astrology in quite this way. And I think that the thing, what the power in this, with this method, is there's less, I mean, don't get me wrong, but an astrologer can still interpret this stuff, but there's a level in which it's not, it doesn't even need interpretation, where it just speaks for itself.
Sure.
Especially in a consultation, you know, like I did with the woman on the podcast. All I did was lead her to these periods in her life. She recognized she was the one living the life. She understood it. It doesn't even matter if I understand what it means to her. She understands.
And then in relaying the stories or retelling the stories, it sort of becomes self-evident, like what the similar themes are that tie those periods together in some way.
Exactly, exactly. So there's not, in one sense, there's not a lot of interpretive work that's necessary, because in many situations, an astrologer can just lead the subject to the period in time, and it's all self-revealing. It's really quite magical. But that's the thing, is in terms of what you're saying, in terms of outsiders, an outsider, I think, is really going to think that an astrologer is just channeling it all. Or the opposite extreme, that we're reading something very, very literal that's giving us, you know, the smallest detail of everything.
Right, like a crystal ball or something.
Right, right. You know, either we're crystal ball, or we're, you know, completely just, you know, psychics. Just psychics, and the chart doesn't matter at all. And that's the thing about the synodic cycle, is it kind of removes the astrologer from the equation to the greatest degree possible. That's what I'm doing with the Synodic Stories series on the podcast, is I'm not doing a whole lot. I'm just showing the person where these periods are and letting their stories be the reading. And it's really, really powerful.
Right. And you're literally just reading the ephemeris in some sense.
In some sense. And they're doing the reading, but they're the ones who are alive. Like I would only ever be, even the best astrologer in the world would only ever be able to communicate this stuff on a symbolic level. Whereas for them, it's visceral. It's their actual memories. Mm. You know, that's something that I don't care how good you are at reading charts, that you can't quite go there.
Yeah. I mean, that's always one of the problems is with astrology, is the symbolic nature of it from the astrologer's standpoint, and the attempt to interpret the symbolism, which, you know, can be very broad, and can have a number of different possible manifestations sort of on a spectrum. You know, how to specifically nail down like where it's going to be on that spectrum and what the specific manifestation is. But with this, you're almost inverting it by clearly showing which periods are supposed to be important, showing that when they should be tied together, and then sort of allowing the client to sort of connect the dots or fill in the missing piece that's left from there.
Yeah. Yeah. And that way it's all theirs, you know, that way it's all theirs. You haven't walked in and sort of rubber stamped them with your little astrological twist, on what their life might mean. You've sort of stepped into, you've popped the hood. You've shown them where, you know, the carburetor is and how that connects to the blah, blah, blah. And you know, not that I know what the inside of a car actually does, but you know, you've really just sort of gone in and showed them what's what, and then it's theirs, you know, and it's not, you haven't gotten your greasy little hands all over it.
Sure. Sure. I think that's a nice and interesting way to reconcile, the two extremes in terms of different approaches that astrologers take to prediction, in terms of the like extremely hands-off approach that I think some modern astrologers advocate and have developed, especially in the field of counseling, where it's just entirely asking questions about the person's life and almost not bringing in the astrology almost at all, versus the other extreme of, you know, the person that just sits and reads the chart and sort of dogmatically asserts like what certain periods or issues, certain predictions about what certain periods should be like and how exactly they would be experienced by the person.
Exactly. I mean, in a way, I circumvent that whole problem of even having to confront either of those options by employing this. Although I would say the former example that you cited would benefit quite a bit from employing this kind of technique, because you can get really, really intimate, really important details. But again, there's a nice sort of safe distance. Most of it really comes down to the person's memories, and not down to your baggage, your perspective, because it's not about you. If you're reading someone's chart, it's got zero to do with you. You were there to be, you know, a vehicle. You were there just to transmit information. It's about them and their relationship with the cosmos. So I do like an approach that the less I need to, I mean, you know, it varies from case to case and what the person's looking for. But in employing this particular technique, I find that it has that sort of sanitary quality.
Sure, sure. Yeah, and I think that would also be impressive and more compelling from the perspective of an outsider or especially like a skeptic of astrology who would want to investigate it and see if there's anything to it, where the astrology is speaking more for itself and it requires less interpretation or less sort of molding on the astrologer's part or even less intervention on some level. So, okay. So in terms of going from here and where people can go from here and some tips for just studying them and what they can do or how they can take this information and other astrologers or students of astrology can start applying it in their lives, what would you say, or what kind of advice would you give them?
Well, I stated it earlier, memorize the five Venus retrogrades.
Okay.
So there's this one that goes from Virgo to Leo. And then 18 months from now, around March of 2017, Venus will go retrograde in Aries. So learn about the Venus retrograde in Aries. And hey, if you've got an Aries moon or an Aries rising or your Libra rising and Aries is your descendant, you know, anything like that, you might already be getting a heads up as to why you should learn about that cycle and maybe go back and figure out what it meant in 2009 or 2001 or 1993 or 1985. 18 months following that, you get a retrograde in Scorpio in the fall of 2018. So again, you go back to 2010, 2002, 1994, etc. Following that, we will have a retrograde in Gemini in 2020, in the spring of 2020, I think around May of 2020. Same process again. And then finally, we have a retrograde in Capricorn that will occur in the year 2022. That's quite a ways from now. but you might consider what was going on in your life 18 months ago, the last time Venus was retrograde, which was in Capricorn, in very late 2013, early 2014. So that's basically it. Those are the 5 points. And we also didn't talk about superior conjunctions. There were also 5 times when Venus makes a conjunction to the Sun when it's not retrograde. This is also, there are also 5 of those every 8 years. And those conjunctions happen in the same place that the inferior conjunctions happen, basically, at these sort of 4-year intervals. So we're talking about 2 5-pointed stars that follow one after the other. So 9 months after every Venus retrograde, you always get a superior conjunction. And then 9 months after a superior conjunction, you always get another Venus retrograde.
And that kind of fills out the whole, what we're looking at here is the entire synodic cycle between Venus and the Sun is essentially, and the important turning points during the course of that.
Exactly, exactly. So so if one memorizes those 5 points, again, one instantly recognizes points in the zodiac where every 8 years those Venus retrograde transits are going to hit. And the first thing to do is to investigate whatever chart you're looking at. If you're starting with your own, obviously, or the charts of people that you're learning astrology with, be they your friends, family, or celebrity charts, find out about the Venus retrograde transits in their lives. And look for those dates. If you see someone's got an Aries moon and you're really curious about what that retrograde would have meant, find out the periods when Venus was retrograde in Aries and have a look.
One other point that I would mention is also just paying attention to what kind of events and themes start developing in the initial buildup phase during the pre-retrograde Venus shadow period. Just because once it hits the degree of the shadow period when it's building up, it starts moving through degrees of the zodiac, basically, that it's eventually going to retrograde back to and then cross over at least once, if not twice more, over the course of the next few weeks or the next month or two. And sometimes you'll see like an echoing or a repeating of similar themes on the specific dates when it goes over the same degrees a few times.
That's very true. That's a great way just to sort of study the phenomenon in a really quick way, is just to look at that. If you've been, maybe go look at your Facebook page for the last 30 days. And if they stoke any kind of memories, if you had a really good day, a really bad day, or something really memorable in your life, pay attention to where Venus was that day, and then look ahead and see when Venus is going to revisit that degree and see how that matter resurfaces in your life. Chris is right. There'll definitely be something staring you in the face if you just have a look.
Sure. And I think Christopher Renstrom's the first person I've heard mention this, because I was thinking it as well when it happened, but he mentioned it on the second episode of your podcast that just came out. But just that, because the Supreme Court marriage on decision on same-sex marriage came out just before the shadow period started, when Venus was essentially about to conjoin Jupiter, just the question or almost wondering if that wasn't something that would be revisited somehow or for some reason later in the summer when the Venus retrograde backs up and goes back to essentially almost that same spot in the zodiac. But then instead of conjoining with Jupiter, conjoins with Mars, and if there might be some sort of contention surrounding that in the future, however that, whatever that would look like. So I don't know if that's actually how it's going to play out, and I haven't studied it enough to say necessarily, but it would be, at least just in terms of how I've seen like Venus retrograde work out sometimes in people's personal lives, the idea of an event happening early in the pre-retrograde shadow period and then coming back to or having to relook at or revisit that later, a few weeks later when Venus comes back to that point, is pretty common, it almost seems like.
Yeah, I think Christopher was quite spot on with that. He's likely right. In terms of how I see that that transit play out over and over. Like I said, what's unique about this summer is the two conjunctions the Venus retrograde makes, the Jupiter conjunction towards the beginning of the retrograde and then the Mars conjunction at the end. And indeed, it's when that Mars conjunction hits at the end of August that Venus will be very close to the degree it was at the time of the gay marriage ruling. And so, no, Christopher's a very savvy astrologer, and I think he hit the nail on the head there. I suspect he's right. Time will tell, but I suspect he's right.
Yeah, well, we'll have to see what happens. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think that sort of covers everything that we wanted to address in terms of this episode. Were there any like last points that you wanted to make just in terms of Venus retrograde as an overall phenomenon, or sort of parting words that you wanted to leave us with just in terms of your thoughts on this as an astrological technique?
And I mean, it's everywhere. I'm not sure what I could say besides that. In terms of what's going on this summer, I've been working on this video. So everything right now, when I think about Venus retrograde, I think about the content of this video that I've been working on. And
yeah, tell me about that, because I don't think we touched upon that enough, but you've been focused on a specific area of Venus retrograde and a specific research project that was connected to a paper, I think, that you published. Yes. Was it 8 years ago now?
It was 8 years ago in the 2007, the summer 2007 ESAR journal. I published an article called Cycles of Injustice. It was about Venus retrograde in a history of U.S. race relations. There is a startling number of very key events in the history of, I guess, what some people call civil rights. Let's just say that the history of U.S. race relations that occur during either the Venus retrograde that we have now in Virgo to Leo, or in the sort of mirroring superior conjunction that occurs 4 years before or after it. So this was an article I wrote 8 years ago. It's a very extensive chronology that just talks about events related to these two points in the Venus cycle. And I'm about to release a video on YouTube, on my YouTube channel and on my website, that is an update of this article. It's about an hour-long video, and I guess what I'm getting at is the material is obviously really difficult political stuff and a lot of violence, and anyone listening to this podcast, unless they don't know what's going on in the news right now, it basically has a lot to do with that and where things could go over the summer. So I'm while Venus retrograde isn't just about hate, it can certainly be about love. Unfortunately, it is also about hate. So that's one of the overwhelming things. What's happening this summer is something that I was sort of concerned about in an abstract way 8 years ago when I wrote the article. But now, seeing how the news is unfolding, everything seems very real. It's a very odd time, I guess, to be an astrologer.
Yeah, it's almost weirder in that it's almost notably more acute now in some ways than it was 8 years ago when you originally wrote it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, 8 years ago, there was an event. There was this sort of racist event in Mississippi, and they had a march in Gina, Mississippi, to protest this event in the summer of 2007 after I posted the article. And at that point in 2007, this march in Gina was the largest, what they call civil rights march, since the 1960s. It was the biggest one that they had had in a very, very long time. I'm sure that's been eclipsed by what happened, say, in Ferguson recently. But I do expect this summer to be quite explosive. Again, what distinguishes this summer's Venus retrograde from others are these interactions with Jupiter and Mars. In particular, this interaction with Jupiter in Leo has a strong correlation with previous instances of multiple riots occurring over the course of a summer. By riots, I really just mean mass violence and clashes between people and police, and usually racially motivated. One summer was 1967 when Jupiter was in Leo, which was called the Long Hot Summer, and there were dozens of these incidences over the course of the summer in the Venus retrograde. Also, the summer of 1919, when Venus was retrograde and Jupiter was in Leo, that was what they called the Red Summer, and there were, again, dozens of these violent clashes. I don't want to be a fear-mongering astrologer. I hope we have a nice summer where we all go to the beach and eat barbecue and do the stuff that we do. But given how things are already unfolding in the news, I guess I don't feel too alarmist. things were already sort of unfolding in such a fashion that it renders that moot.
Yeah, I mean, and you have interesting developments like the Confederate flag thing finally coming into sort of broader focus and being addressed finally. I think that just occurred in the last few weeks during the shadow period, right?
Yes, I was already hard at work on this video when this horrible shooting in Charleston happened. And my first response was, I mean, I was horrified, but I had already been spending weeks looking at, you know, church bombings that killed little girls and lynchings and, I mean, horrible, horrible things. So I was already in this headspace where I was confronted with this kind of violence. And seeing that the Charleston thing happened, my first reaction was, well, something really good is going to come of this because I know how this plays out. When we had a Civil Rights Act happen in 1964 that was very strongly motivated by the fact that a church bombing in Alabama had killed four little girls. When the violence gets that over the top, there's a political release of some kind. It's really tough to talk about these things and face them, but for every sort of horrific event, there's some kind of gain acquired. There is something about this Venus retrograde cycle that has something to do with sacrifice, and I think that's an element of it. It still seems rather unjust and unnecessary, but insofar as the astrology reflects realities in the world, I'd say it's pretty spot on, unfortunately, in this case.
That's really interesting, the idea that there's sort of almost like recurring events of like a tragedy or a strife that then leads to sort of an improvement on a broader social level as a result of it or in reaction to it during the retrogrades. Is that one of the sort of broader conclusions or themes that you've noticed? Is it just a recurring factor?
I think in this case, it was really just that the revelation in studying the history of this violence, that when something goes that far, there will be a pushback. And so that was just my hunch and my reaction to that. Does it have to do with Venus retrograde? Well, again, much of this kind of violence occurs during Venus retrograde. I mean, that's what I'm going to be demonstrating in this video. It's rather astonishing. Not everything. You do get racial violence when Venus isn't retrograde. The Martin Luther King riots, Venus wasn't retrograde. The LA riots in 92 for Rodney King, Venus wasn't retrograde either. But you know what those two events have in common? They occurred 24 years apart to the month. In other words, the Rodney King riots were still a sort of synodic Venus return of the Martin Luther King riots, even if they didn't correspond to a Venus retrograde phase.
Right. Venus would have been in exactly the same spot in the zodiac and would have occurred on roughly the same dates.
Exactly. Two within the same month, not the same calendar date, but to the same month. But again, so there is this is a whole new way of looking at the calendar, at looking at chronology, at looking at history, and you know, looking at the really big questions in politics like this.
Great. Well, awesome. Well, people should definitely check out your video since I'm sure it'll go really in depth into that subject. And they can check it out, I think, at your website, which is nickdigginbest.com.
Correct.
Additionally, you also, your second episode of your new podcast, iloveastrology.com, just came out, and it's on the topic of Venus retrograde, and you actually interview a bunch of different astrologers on this topic.
Yes, it's actually, I think the URL is iloveastrologypodcast.com. I think iloveastrology.com was actually taken, so I have iloveastrologypodcast.com, but you can also just go to nickdigginbest.com and find it. And yes, I have my second episode. It's called Consensus. Venus, this summer's Venus retrograde is discussed. I've got great interviews with Christopher Renstrom, Gary Caden, and Nina Griffin, and Kate Petty is my co-host. And it's just coming out now.
Excellent. Well, I'm excited about your show, and I loved the first and the second episode. So I definitely think that other people that like this podcast would really enjoy yours. So I'd encourage people to check it out. Yeah. All right.
Please
well,
do.
I think that brings us to the end of our discussion today about Venus retrograde. So thanks a lot for joining me. Hopefully, you and everyone else has a relatively decent rest of their retrograde, since it's just starting today and now we're getting into the thick of it. But we'll have to have you back again next time to discuss other planetary cycles, like perhaps the Mars retrograde phase or something like that.
You bet. I can't wait. And I'm going to have you on my show too, Chris. You better be ready.
All right. I will be on my toes.
Excellent.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Da-na-na. Right. Da-na-na.